The world may tell us that Easter is about eggs and chocolate bunnies, but we Christians know that there would be no Easter without Jesus' death and resurrection. Emmanuel Press has just released an Easter card with beautiful artwork that confesses Christ's victory over death and his redemption of mankind. You can find this card and others at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L press.us. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. An AP headline over the weekend reads, Mormon leaders encourage more baptisms for the dead. The words come from Henry Eyring, who is a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. He says in part that God wants all his children home again in families and in glory. They have learned that this work, that is baptism on behalf of the dead, saves not just the dead, it saves all of us. There are now many people who have accepted baptism in the spirit world. This is the work of our generation, said Henry Eyre. What is proxy baptism, baptism for the dead, in Mormon practice? Why do they do it, and why do they consider it so important? We're going to be answering those questions on this Monday afternoon. Bill McKeever joins us. He's founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, and author of several books, including, in their own words, a collection of Mormon quotations and Mormonism 101. Bill, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Todd.
For a little context, what is the Quorum of the 12 Apostles? What authority does it have in the LDS Church?
Well, in the Mormon leadership, you have a hierarchy of basically three top positions. You have what's known as the First Presidency, which is composed of the prophet, seer, and revelator. Thomas S. Monson is the current leader of the Mormon Church. He has two counselors. Now, when you read that out of that article, I have not seen that article, but if they have Henry Eyring listed as an apostle, that would be a typo, because he is one of Thomas Monson's counselors within the First Presidency. But below that group, that top three echelon, you might say, is what's known as the Quorum of the Twelve, or the Twelve Apostles. These are part of the Brethren, as they're known, and they do carry a lot of authority, no doubt, but they do not have more what Mormons would call priesthood authority than the top three men that make up the First Presidency. So the Quorum of the Twelve is still very important. Then below them, you have what's known as the First Quorum of the 70. And then below that, you have various other quorums of the 70 of even lesser importance. But the top three men, and then below them, the top 12 men, or top 15 total, those would be probably the more powerful, most authoritative leaders in the Mormon Church.
What was the nature of this meeting in Salt Lake City that got reported in the press, and the role and the things that were said there, especially the role of the baptism?
Oh, they're probably talking about General Conference. General Conference is held twice a year here in Salt Lake City. It's held in April, and again, it will be held in October. And when Mormons gather for General Conference, they are led to believe that when they hear something being said at General Conference, it's as if God is speaking to his servants there at General Conference. So whatever they hear during that weekend of meetings, they can pretty much take to the bank as being official Mormon teaching. And they have even described General Conference as being not on a par with the four standard works, but very, very important to Latter-day Saints. And one Mormon leader even said it's like their marching orders for the next 6 months. So if a Christian was to quote something from something that was said at General Conference, they would certainly be using information that the Mormon should believe, but not necessarily does it mean that they will believe it or do believe it, but they are supposed to believe what's taught at General Conference. So using statements from General Conference, I think, is a pretty safe thing to use when talking with our Mormon friends, because Mormons are supposed to agree with what they're being told there.
What is proxy baptism in Mormon practice?
Proxy baptism would be where a Mormon will do the genealogy to find out, for instance, an ancestor of theirs. And then they will go to a Mormon temple, and they're all the same when it comes to this. They all have a baptismal font for the dead. And they will go and take that name. They will go and be baptized on behalf of that deceased person. then that person is believed to have the opportunity to receive the quote-unquote restored gospel. Now, that's the gospel according to Mormonism, but they'll have the opportunity to receive this gospel message as they understand it in the spirit world. Now, they don't have to accept it. In fact, Mormons make a big deal about free agency and the ability to believe something or not believe something. And so the person that is baptized, you know, by proxy can reject it. And so when a Mormon, you know, says, and I think it was mentioned at General Conference, that they have confidence that a lot of the deceased have embraced Mormonism in the spirit world, there's no way that they can really know that, because the deceased, according to Mormonism, has the opportunity to reject it. And though I know a lot of Mormons probably feel pretty good about the fact that they did something that their church told them to do, and they probably have some positive feelings about it, they can't know for sure if it yielded a positive result.
So the Mormons are taught to believe that these proxy baptisms give opportunity to the dead to become, in essence, Mormons in the spirit world.
Yes. And that's why it's a very important aspect of Mormonism, so much so that Joseph Smith said that if you don't do it, and in fact, let me read it to you. This is from the Teachings of the Prophet Joseph Smith, page 193. He said, those saints who neglect it, this is baptism for the dead, in behalf of their deceased relatives, do it at the peril of their own salvation. He also said that baptism for the dead is the greatest responsibility in this world that God has placed upon us, meaning Latter-day Saints, and that is to seek after our dead. So it's most of what goes on in Mormon temples are proxy baptisms on behalf of the dead. Now, you're not going to find anywhere in Christian history that the temple in Jerusalem was ever used for something like that. But that is a primary function in Mormon temples today, aside from the endowment ceremony and also marriages for time and eternity.
With only about a minute here, Bill, does this explain why Mormons are so diligent in tracing genealogies, not only for themselves, but for anyone who's willing to ask?
Yeah, I would say that's probably the primary reason, Todd, because they do feel that in doing this, they become what they call saviors on Mount Zion for their deceased relatives. And so they want to give their deceased relatives the opportunity to hear and believe what they have heard and believe. Now, there's a lot of confusion even among Mormons on this, because Bruce McConkie, who was a Mormon apostle, made it very clear that this is not a second chance for salvation. He made it very clear, and I think he's correct on this, that baptism for the dead was really instituted for those who never heard about Mormonism, but would have embraced it had they heard about it. It's not for, let's say, a lukewarm Mormon who doesn't want to live a good Mormon life as they understand it. And then he dies, and then some relatives is baptized for him, and that makes everything okay. McConkie said that would do absolutely nothing for an individual like that. Baptism for the dead is primarily, was understood to be an opportunity for those who never heard about the message delivered by Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism, but would have embraced it had they heard. That's really who it's for.
Bill McKeever is founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. You can purchase these books and find out more about Mormonism Research Ministry at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bill, thank you.
Hey, glad to help.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to be talking with Cleta Mitchell about her recent New York Times column titled No Room for Dissent in Women's Movement Today. And we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on the Passion of Christ. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
How do we find real masculinity with Jesus hanging on a cross? The Issues Etc. book of the month for April is titled Man Up, The Quest for Masculinity. It's written by regular guest Pastor Jeff Hemmer. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Men in all stages of life will appreciate Man Up. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Man Up, 1-800-325-3040.